This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, November 18th, 2011. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Support for KUAF is provided by Rogers Historical Museum, featuring Benton County crime stories. This interactive exhibit offers notorious criminals, lawmen, infamous crimes, and incidents of mischief. More information is available by calling 621-1154 or rogersarkansas.com/museum.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a local entrepreneur returns to bringing musical acts to Northwest Arkansas. And we take a look at a new indie craft show in Fayetteville called The Little Craft Show. Plus, as she is every Friday, Becca Bacon Martin from Northwest Arkansas Newspaper stops by the studio to bring us her entertainment suggestions for the weekend.
We begin this edition of Ozarks with a look at wage theft. Last night, the Northwest Arkansas Workers Justice Center, based in Springdale, hosted a wage theft forum at the Odom Law Firm in downtown Fayetteville. Afterwards, some of the participants walked across the square to picket a local restaurant, currently under investigation for wage theft. The protest was framed as a shaming campaign. Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Jamás será vencido.
¿Qué es lo que queremos?
Justicia.
¿Cuándo?
Ahora.
For several hours last night, in the dark, in the cold, three dozen people protested in front of Oseguera's Mexican restaurant, now renamed Celly's, on Center Street in downtown Fayetteville, holding placards and chanting.
Justicia.
¿Cuándo?
Ahora.
¿Qué es lo que queremos?
The restaurant's been investigated by the Fed for cheating employees out of their wages, as much as $147,000. And new claims have arisen about unpaid overtime. The Jose Oseguera's Caldera family, who operates Celly's, declined comment. But one worker, Julio Arreo, a former employee, said wage theft at the cafe has been chronic.
I worked there approximately 2 months, and I was a waiter there. And I was basically robbed of my money, you could say. They stole my wages, and they have yet to pay me. I had been telling them, I called them and everything, and they have failed to pay me as well. And on occasions, they have paid my regular wages late, and basically that is what brought me to fight for against wage theft and support this movement.
Exploitation's got to go. Hey, hey, ho, ho. Exploitation's got to go.
Arreo, a U.S. citizen enrolled in the University of Arkansas Civil Engineering degree program, had just purchased a car when he was working at the restaurant, but was unable to make payments without his paychecks. The picket was legally permitted with police on hand monitoring the situation. Protesters at one point did enter the restaurant to dialogue with the managers to no avail.
I am not an immigrant worker. I am a United States citizen. But
at a public education forum preceding the picket, Julio Arreo and others talked about wage theft. The panel was moderated by Democratic State Representative Greg Letting, District 92, Fayetteville, who sponsored anti-wage theft legislation last year during the 2011 General Assembly. It's currently in interim study. Other panelists included Pat Babb, owner of Village Inn Restaurants in Fayetteville, a self-described Republican. She provided a moral business case for wage compliance. A local minister provided the scriptural case. And a U.S. Department of Labor wage and hour agent was on hand to field any questions after. She could not speak on the record, but did confirm Oseguera's restaurant was under investigation. Wage theft costs mostly low-wage workers billions of dollars annually, according to studies conducted 5 years ago by the Urban Institute and the Government Accountability Office. 2 million workers aren't paid minimum wage. 3 million are misclassified as independent contractors instead of employees. And millions more are illegally denied overtime pay. That was before the U.S. recession of 2008. Things may be much worse now as businesses struggle to make a profit. Members of the Northwest Arkansas Workers Justice Center say shaming campaigns like the one staged last night at Oseguera's restaurant in Fayetteville are designed to serve notice to businesses involved in wage theft.
My name is Ana Aguayo, and I am the Director of Communications and Fundraising at the Workers' Justice Center.
My name is Fernando Garcia. I'm the Associate Director of Campaign Organizing. Wage theft is, it's not unique to Arkansas, and it's not unique to Northwest Arkansas. It's a problem that we're seeing everywhere. Our parent organization is Interfaith Worker Justice, and it's of a network made up of worker centers across the country, and they're all seeing the same problem, wage theft. Currently here at the Workers Justice Center, about 75% of our cases that we get are wage theft.
It happens to a lot of people, whether in their teens or in their mid-40s, 50s. The difference is that some people will get frustrated enough to speak up about it. There will be others who are witnessing or are being victims of wage theft and will never report it, will never fight for those owed wages, whether it's a week or months of owed wages that they're owed.
The Workers' Justice Center staff travel the region and state, teaching residents about the various forms of wage theft.
It can be from stealing tips from tipped employees, being paid less than what you were promised. For example, if you went into work, they said, we'll pay you $12 an hour. Then when you get your paycheck, it says $8 an hour. We consider that wage theft. Paying less than minimum wage. The state minimum wage is right now $6.25. The federal minimum wage is $7.25. So paying below minimum wages and also not paying adequately for overtime, that's wage theft as well. Sometimes not being paid for all the hours worked. And we're seeing that very common in the restaurant industry. The most extreme cases is not being paid at all. And we're seeing that in the construction industry, where workers are maybe at a job site for a week, then they go to another job site for another week, and they just keep changing job sites. They might not even get paid for one job site at all.
So how do workers recover missing wages?
Of course, is coming to the worker center, and here we'll guide them through the process to recover wages. But they also have the option of going to the Department of Labor, where they can file a wage claim or a complaint on wage and hour in the wage and hour division, and then the Department of Labor will do an investigation to see how much is owed to that worker. Workers have the option to go to small claims court if the wages owed are less than $5,000. So they do also have that option. We guide them through that process. And with small claims court, they can sue the employer themselves and go in front of the judge where they can present the evidence that they're owed, and the judge will make a decision.
We serve as advocates, so we try to help the community understand the steps they can take. Many times people are afraid and they feel that the process is too complicated for them to file through alone. So the staff at the Workers' Justice Center helps facilitate that. We also mediate with the employer. We send letters on our behalf and on behalf of the worker, trying to negotiate in a friendly manner the wages before trying to point fingers or criminalize everything.
Northwest Arkansas Workers' Justice Center also conducts labor organizing to empower employees to stand up for their rights. A primary funder of the center is the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation, and the group was recently honored with a 2011 Omni Peace and Justice Award. Center staff also advocate on behalf of undocumented workers who've been treated unfairly. Ana Aguayo.
We have the understanding that regardless of the person's documented or undocumented status, they have the ability to fight for the wages or the hours that they have worked. The Department of Labor has established that they will only focus on what is the labor violation and will not focus on the immigration status of the worker.
And in small claims court as well, the employer who owes the wages has brought up that as an issue in front of the judge, and the judge did not allow that argument. The judge said just because somebody's undocumented doesn't mean you can exploit them. Mm-hmm. Just because they're undocumented doesn't mean that their labor is free.
Last year, Fayetteville Mayor Lionel Jordan issued a proclamation condemning wage theft, reportedly the first city in the nation to do so. The Northwest Arkansas Workers Justice Center Forum and Protest is part of a national Days of Action Against Wage Theft hosted by the Interfaith Workers' Justice Center, based in Chicago, Illinois.
Justicia, justicia.
And into the near future, picketers will maintain a presence in front of Oseguera's restaurant on Center Street in Fayetteville until the wage theft dispute is resolved. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
For more information, visit nwawjc.org.
Earth, sky, today, the possibility of abrupt climate change. Earth Sky spoke with Richard Alley, a Penn State geologist and winner of a 2011 Hines Award for his work on abrupt climate change. Alley studies ice cores, samples from the accumulation of snow and ice laid down over many years in Greenland and Antarctica. This ice shows that Earth's climate changed abruptly in the past. With more of the greenhouse gas CO2 added each year to Earth's atmosphere, Dr. Alley is worried that abrupt climate change could happen again.
What we're a little worried about is that we do know from history, from our ice cores and from other records, that occasionally the climate is not well behaved.
Ice cores from Greenland show that around 11,500 years ago, average temperatures in Greenland increased by about 15 degrees Fahrenheit over the course of 10 years or so. Alley said this abrupt change was prompted, at least partially, by melting polar ice, which altered ocean circulation and weather patterns.
So a lot of us are working really hard to get the fundamental physics of how these giant 2-mile-thick piles of ice flow, how they behave, how they grow and melt, and what they might do in the future.
As today's climate warms, ice is again melting near Earth's poles. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
One local production company has found that risk-taking gives them an edge on the national market. Mike Hart got his start in TV, working for a local station. After climbing his way up the ladder, he branched out and opened Five Star Productions. It got its start producing local commercials. Jeremy Dean, Five Star's marketing director, says that the company has blossomed over the past 15 years.
It's obviously a much different scale as far as the type of production work that we do, you know, rather than just the local small spots. You know, we're really kind of grown into more of a national company. And currently, you know, we have the office here, you know, because we've been a local hometown company, I guess you could say, for years. But a lot of our clients are national companies. So the agencies are from Atlanta and Dallas, Los Angeles. So, you know, they've got us running all over the place shooting various national commercial spots. And then, of course, our bread and butter is also all the local clients that we deal with on a daily basis.
The company doesn't only produce commercials. Five Star recently shot ABC's Extreme Makeover Home Edition, both here locally and on location.
We were the B crew. What they do is, you know, for instance, with that show, ABC has a production company in Los Angeles that they hire out to do that show. So that they go to every location that they're shooting, and they have the A crew that is shooting things. And then you have another crew, which would be us, that shoots B-roll, interviews, you know, various things when the artist actually is performing, you know, usually because they'll bring a recording artist in to perform, we'll shoot that. So it's such a big operation when you put something together like that, that they need multiple crews. So, you know, we'll travel wherever they need us to shoot something like that.
Continuing to grow on the national level, Five Star has teamed up with another local production company, Trifecta, owned by Travis Joyner. Together, they are filming Last Shot with Judge Gunn. The show, shot in the Fayetteville and Fort Smith area, is based on the drug court program, previously led by former Arkansas Circuit Court Judge Marianne Gunn. It is broadcast to over 70 million homes. Jeremy says that this is a massive thing coming out of Arkansas and has opened the door to other opportunities.
And because of our relationship with Trifecta and those guys out of Los Angeles flying in, they fly in every week. They've really developed a rapport with us. They ended up hiring Travis, and then Travis hired Mike, the owner of Five Star, to fly out to Los Angeles last month to shoot the cast of The Sopranos for a new show that they're pitching, I believe, to Showtime or HBO, which is a judge-type show. It's kind of a different concept. Basically, it's got the cast of The Sopranos sitting in this Italian restaurant watching cases going on, and obviously, you know, putting their spin, the mobster spin on these cases. But we went out there and shot that. It's been pretty cool to be able to, you know, one week we're working with the cast of The Sopranos, and the next week we're, you know, shooting a dental spot for a local company, and we're able to kind of jump back and forth between those two worlds.
Jeremy credits the company's age and presence in the area as one of the factors to its success. While competition does exist, each competitor has a niche in its market, And Five Star has been lucky to build relationships across the board.
We've been somewhat fortunate in the fact that we've been here for so long to build up to the level that we are. You know, we are one of the largest film production and video production companies in the state of Arkansas and Oklahoma. We'll shoot in Dallas one day, we'll be in Tulsa the next week, we'll be in Little Rock. And I don't, sometimes you'll see those companies here in Fort Smith shooting spots. So, but you know, the fact that we were kind of the only cowboy in town for a long time allowed us to really build up. And I think it's one of those things, because of our service and the expertise behind it, you know, we've been able to keep those clients for the long haul.
The capable and creative staff is yet another aspect that sets Five Star apart, providing an edge in the national market. In addition, advances in technology have proven to be useful.
The Red Epic is the new camera that we've brought on board, and actually we're looking at a Red Scarlet as well. It's a different version of the camera. Not to get too technical, but basically it's feature film level digital cinematography. So, for instance, Peter Jackson, he's shooting the new Hobbit film on that camera. The new Spider-Man film that's coming out is being shot on that. The Last Pirates of the Caribbean was entirely shot on that camera. So those, you know, that cinematic quality as far as the level of production, that's what we're using. And we're one of the first in this entire area, whether it's Arkansas and Oklahoma, to be using that type of technology.
Jeremy says that it is rumored that James Cameron recently purchased 50 of the Red Epic cameras. At $100,000 each, it is a hefty investment, both for Cameron and for Five Star. But an investment that was well worth the risk, setting them apart from others in the area.
The great thing about that is we're able to bring that level of production to all the local companies. So, and you know, I think a lot of people's misconception is when they think about local television production, they think about the local spot that's really cheesy and just terrible looking, as we see so many of those when we're watching television. I guarantee you, if you see a five-star production spot, it's a night-and-day difference. People go, oh, where was that shot at? You know, how did they pull that off? And so I think people aren't really accustomed to seeing that level of production, and we're able to offer that to our clients at a price that they would never been able to get before. So that's kind of what the Red Epic has allowed us to do.
Advances in technology continue to allow the company to broaden their clientele, as well as bring them into the future. Digital production and the internet allow Five Star to share an edit with someone in New York or anywhere, limiting travel costs and speeding up delivery. While his background is in music and film production, everything from NSYNC to ESPN, Jeremy has chosen to remain the face of the company. Though with a small staff, everyone wears multiple hats. He says that you might even see the owner taking out the trash. What does Jeremy like about his job with Five Star? That no day is like the one before. Among his favorite projects was working on the back end of a feature film, Resurrection County. It is currently being viewed in 22 countries, with a United States release in the works. He also enjoys working with commercials.
Doing all the national spots has been a lot of fun, you know, just working with the agencies and seeing, you know, different ways of doing things. And a lot of the local spots, too, have just been a lot of fun. We just wrapped up the Sparks spot for the Sparks Hospital System, and it came out amazing, and everybody just loved it. And I think, for me, the most rewarding part of it is at the end of the day, when the client sees, you know, what we've done, and when you actually see it on the air and they start getting calls on it, that's the most rewarding part of it, is working with the clients and seeing their reaction to it. So, yeah, every day's a new day here. It's a lot of fun. It's definitely not the 9-to-5 grind, you know, a lot of people do. It's everybody that walks in here goes, wow, this place is different. It's got a fun, creative vibe. We like to have a good time. You know, we're very loose in the way that we do things, but it's a hardworking crew. We just have a lot of fun with it. I think and hope that translates to the product that we're churning out to. It's different. It's unique. It's kind of edgy.
While maintaining a home base in Fort Smith is important to Five Star, Jeremy says that the company is headed in a new direction. They will be opening a studio in Northwest Arkansas next year. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
this is Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday night from 10 till midnight. On this week's show, we'll hear music from John Stetch and Ed Sandin, Kenny Werner, Nilson Mata's Brazilian Voyage, and we'll also hear the Westchester Jazz Orchestra. This and much more Friday night at 10 p.m. on Shades of Jazz.
It's Friday, November 18th, 2011, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Graham.
And I'm Christina Thomas.
And joining us now is Becca Bacon-Martin, features editor for Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
You know, after all that perky Christmas thing last week, I've got to slow down.
Okay.
So I've got some things to talk about besides Christmas, but if you're ready for Christmas to start this weekend, the lighting ceremonies are on the Bentonville and the Fayetteville squares tomorrow.
Already. I didn't realize they did that before Thanksgiving.
They always used to do it on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and it was a big tradition to rush out of work and try to get there. But now we've moved it up to the weekend before. Both happen about 6 p.m., and we'll have a running calendar of holiday events in What's Up every Friday from now until Christmas.
Okay.
But let's move on to some other things.
Okay.
You say it because you say it right. The Pinta and the...
Oh, the Nina and the Pinta?
Yes, are... in Fort Smith, which might seem odd to you.
So the boats that historically Christopher Columbus came over on.
Yes. And these are like full-size
replicas
that are in the river in Fort Smith, and they will only be there through Sunday. They are at daily fleeting service on Riverfront Drive. Hours are 9 to 5 today, tomorrow, and Sunday, and you can pay some small amount of money to tour them. They leave Fort Smith and go to Muskogee, Oklahoma through December 7th. So if you miss them in Fort Smith, they say that the Nina is the most historically accurate replica of a Columbus ship ever built.
Okay.
Really interesting. You can find out more at www.thenina.com. There's a ton of theater this weekend.
Which you love.
Which I love. The Adding Machine at University Theater, last three shows. Rock of Ages.
Continuing.
At the Walton Arts Center with 80s hair band music. How was it that Kevin Kinder, our music writer, put it? That the first two or three rows are covered in glitter and the rest of you will be covered in schmaltz. But it'll be a lot of fun.
All right.
8 today, 2 and 8 tomorrow, 2 and 7 Sunday. Tickets start at $39. Bentonville High School is doing 12th night.
Oh, okay.
Which, you know, high school shows come in various levels of professionalism, but this is... their drama teacher is Justin Schauer. So I have great faith. One of the UA's great drama grads and performs with some of the local theater companies. And he's amazing. He did the one-man show a couple of years ago, the name of which escapes me. I'm trying to tell you, I guarantee this will be good.
Oh, I believe you.
2 and 7 on Saturday and 2 on Sunday at the Air and Art Center in Bentonville. Tickets are $8. And Arts Life Theater is doing Cinderella.
Yes.
Fairy tale.
7 today, 2 and 7 tomorrow, and 2 on Sunday, and tickets are $8 to $12. We've got some music.
Of course.
Jose's on Dixon Street is hosting a benefit concert on Saturday, raising money for Youth Strategies, which is a Springdale-based organization assisting at-risk youth. Performing at Saturday's event, which starts at 6 o'clock, are bands like Contraband, Real Live Vikings, and Mason Jars.
Oh, I like that last one.
The event is free and donations are encouraged. Nathan Aronowitz, what a kid. He has been playing blues music professionally since he was about old enough to climb on a bar stool.
Professionally?
Yes.
Is he from the area or he just moseyed his way
no,
here?
No, he is from the area. Early this year, he was a top performer at the Ozark Blues Challenge, which means he gets to go to Memphis for the International Blues Challenge in January. And he's playing this weekend with his band Max RPM. At 9:30 Saturday at Legacy Blues in Fayetteville. Admission is free. And on Sunday afternoon, the Ozark Mountains British Brass Band is playing Americana and Christmas music at White Auditorium at Northwest Arkansas Community College, and those tickets are $10. And wrapping up with my favorite thing about the holiday season, want to guess?
Shopping?
Good guess. The Women in the Arts Festival is this weekend, Saturday at the Omni Center in Fayetteville from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. and also tonight from 7 to 10. And there's art and photos and knitted and quilted items and jewelry and artwork and aromatherapy bath products all for sale by local artists. And admission to get in and spend your money is free.
Now, I saw a flyer for this the other day and I meant to ask you, is this a new event or is this something that's been going on a while?
I do not believe that this event has happened before.
Okay.
I believe it is a new event. Going on forever, however, is the holiday market on the square tomorrow at the farmer's market. Starts at the ungodly hour of 7, and they will have all sorts of wonderful things. And this is the Fall Antique Show and Sale Weekend in Eureka Springs. 10 o'clock to 6 o'clock tomorrow and 10 to 4 on Sunday at the Inn of the Ozarks Convention Center. Admission is $3. Drooling is free.
I feel like that may be the one where you will be at.
That's a distinct possibility. She does know me, folks.
Thanks, Becca.
Becca Bacon-Martin is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blue Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this Friday, and we're going to play some Sam Sliva and the Good, Anders Osborne, Chris Kane, Igor Prado, Laura Price, Cedric Burnside, and Lightning Malcolm, and a couple from Paul Thorne and a few others. And that's every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas.
Oklahoma State University women's basketball coach Kirk Butke and assistant women's basketball coach Miranda Serna have died. They were killed, along with two others, Thursday night in a plane crash in Perry County, Arkansas. Butke and Serna were on a recruiting trip to Arkansas. The other two individuals, including the pilot, were not affiliated with the university. Mike Holder, OSU Vice President for Athletics, said Jim Littell, Associate Head Coach, would assume duties as Interim Head Coach. The university announced the Cowgirls will not play games scheduled Saturday and Sunday. OSU counselors and athletic staff are offering assistance to the Cowgirls student athletes and staff. Budke was in his seventh season as Cowgirl Coach with an all-time record of 112-83. Under his direction, OSU made postseason appearances each of the past five seasons, including three trips to the NCAA tournament.
A Little Rock Chamber of Commerce task force aimed at unifying the community wants the city to repeal a 1957 city council declaration. It supported the intervention at Central High by Governor Orville Faubus. Task force member Ruth Shepard says the declaration basically praises Governor Faubus for sending the Arkansas National Guard to prevent nine black students from integrating to the school.
We felt that none of us could judge what they did then because we don't know what we might have done. But that today we know better. I think that when folks realize that we have this opportunity, that there will be a groundswell of support for recognizing a past wrong and for moving forward in a more equitable manner.
Mayor Mark Stadola told the task force the resolution would be on the agenda for consideration at the December 6th board meeting. Shepard says they also want board members to review all city ordinances and declarations that might reflect negatively on some citizens.
Senator Mark Pryor says he's optimistic the budget super committee in Congress will meet its deadline next week to make $1.2 trillion in cuts to the federal budget. In fact, Pryor is urging the panel to go big with its recommendations. Those figures would mean significant spending cuts, but in a conference call with reporters Wednesday, Pryor said that's the message that needs to be sent.
We need to send a very positive signal to the American people, to the financial markets, to other countries, that we can take care of this debt, that we are not going to be captives to our debt, that we can do this, we can manage this. We can get it turned around. It may take a few years, but we can get it turned around.
Reports have varied in projecting the super committee's success or failure, but Pryor says his optimism comes from the members of the committee he has spoken with.
KUAF is supported by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, celebrating the American spirit by uniting the power of art with the beauty of nature. Open in Bentonville, 11 a.m. daily, except Tuesdays. Free tickets are available online at crystalbridges.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Northwest Arkansas music scene is full of an eclectic mix of musicians who perform shows throughout the region almost every night. A local Fayetteville resident has plans to add more indie rock to the lineup. Ozarks at Large's Katie Hendrickson has more.
Fans of indie rock here in Fayetteville are rejoicing because Clunk Presents is bringing shows back to Fayetteville. Chris Selby, who also goes by Clunk, has been a veteran of the independent music scene here in Fayetteville.
Had a record store for 10 years, Clunk Records, and a music hall for 4.5. Retired from all that in 2005. Became an electrician. Retired from that. Now I deliver food, and I'm about to start booking shows again. And I got a show coming up Thursday, December 15th, with Morning Teleportation from Portland, Oregon at the Dixon Theater.
Tell us a little bit more about why you decided you're going to book shows again.
Well, when I was an electrician doing construction work, I kind of got out of it because the early hours and the hard physical labor, and just kind of removed myself from going to shows and being a social and everything. And then when I finished up with that, got laid off, started my own little food delivery company, decided it was time to start, you know, doing shows again, because I always had a lot of fun doing that, bringing different bands to towns for people to check out, and it kind of just gave me something interesting to do. Makes me happy and stresses me out really badly sometimes.
Selby plans to fill a void in the current music scene.
I think George's is doing, you know, some bigger shows that I would like to see, you know, like Dinosaur Jr. comes through, Dr. Dog, you know, there's different bands every once in a while that come through. And then there's some other, you know, smaller punk and indie bands coming through, but there's not the bands kind of in the middle. You know, there's a $20 ticket and a $3 ticket show, but there's not the $8 to $10 show of the band that's, you know, on their way up or whatever, and just people know, and I don't know, it seems like there's just a kind of a hole for that type of show right now.
The all-ages venue, Clunk Music Hall, was on College Avenue, and it brought through acts like Modest Mouse and La Savie Fave. Ultimately, the venue proved unsustainable for Selby, and he decided he had to close. Selby explains how it all started and how it all eventually came to an end.
Well, I was already booking shows different places, like at the Greek Theater, did some stuff at the Skate Station, we did a lot of house shows and stuff back then. And I already had a little record store, a very small record store, Clunk Records. And, you know, there were a lot of people around then and a lot of bands, and just thought, man, if we just had our own venue where we did our stuff, did all ages shows, it would be really awesome. And, you know, lots of kids would get to see bands, bring different people to town. So I just jumped in, rented a place, and went from there. So, yeah, looking back, it was kind of a ridiculous move, but I'm glad I did it.
And why did you eventually decide that it wasn't sustainable?
It was kind of a lull in the music scene, as far as there weren't quite as many bands, and the draw for bands, local bands, wasn't as good. It was just like losing money. And so it was just time to shut it down, because couldn't afford to pay the rent anymore. And, you know, and I think at one point there were so many bigger bands coming through that hadn't come before. People get a little spoiled. You get too many shows coming through, and there's no way to sustain it, no matter how much people want to. It's just, yeah, too much for one town to handle. So they'll be like, oh, I'm not going to go see this band tonight, because I'm going to go see this band I really, really want to see more a couple nights later. And people take less chances on seeing stuff that they weren't, you know, ultra familiar with.
And how often are you planning on bringing shows to Fayetteville?
Once every month or two, I'll bring a band in, you know, and if no one I want to do a show with is coming through for 3 or 4 months, I may not have a show, but hopefully every month or two, I'll find something I really like and I think will do well here and, you know, people should see. So it's pretty much the plan. Keep it on a hobby level.
Sabi plans to make music booking a hobby. His bread and butter remains Klunk's Hungry Express Wagon, or CHEW, which is a local food delivery service that he started when he was laid off as an electrician. How's the food delivery business going?
Oh, the food delivery business is awesome. If you're hungry, call me, 283-7655. Bring you something to eat.
How did you come up with the idea for this?
I'd been laid off for a couple months from being an electrician, and I think we're watching the basketball game, NBA basketball game, and we're pretty hungry. It was no time to, you couldn't take any time off from the game, and no one wanted to eat what was currently available for delivery. So like the light bulb went off and I was like, that's a real simple idea. I'll bring people food for a fee. And then, yeah, it's seriously like within a few days I was doing it.
A downtown food delivery service and more independent music coming through Northwest Arkansas, thanks to Chris Selby. Klunk Presents' first show in over 5.5 years is Morning Teleportation, and that happens on December 15th at the Dixon Theater in Fayetteville. It's an 18-plus show. In closing, let's listen to Morning Teleportation's Expanding Anyway. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Katie Henriksen.
This is Ozarks at Large. When craft shows come to the area, they often feature artisans from around the country. On December 3rd at Vintage Fellowship in Fayetteville, a new event will focus on local artists. Natalie Freeman and Amber Paradin are the co-founders of the Little Craft Show, and earlier this week, they stopped by the studio to talk to me about their new event.
The Little Craft Show is it's the first ever event, indie craft show, holiday market for the patrons of Fayetteville or surrounding areas even. So we have put together a collection of, we've handpicked about 25 people that are from the regional area. Some people are from Oklahoma and some people are from Little Rock. And we've put them together and we've carefully juried and pulled, we've received a ton of submissions, by the way. Yeah, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, the Little Craft Show, it's basically the first indie craft show in Fayetteville. And so what it is it has a certain aesthetic. So whenever you go in, we're going to have decorations that are handmade by volunteers. And you'll be able to walk in and we'll have refreshments and a free photo booth. And there are just all of these artists that are totally just amazing and unique. And so we have some women who spin their own yarn. We have an artist who, she creates her own t-shirts and she actually presses them. Like, there are these artists that have this craftsmanship that's just totally unique and totally their own. And we've hand chosen them to be in the show, and it just has this local vibe with all of these local sponsors who have totally supported us and are awesome. So
why? I mean, we have craft shows throughout the area throughout the year. It's kind of a big craft place, and we get people from across the country. So why did you feel it was important to have this show that was local artists, you know, regional, so local instead of, you know, California or Maine or whatever?
I think because there's a feeling in Fayetteville that's totally unique. What do you think, Amber?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know. That's an interesting question because we're constantly having to try to define what an indie craft show is, and it's a really interesting term. We've even tried to Google it just to see if there was a set, and there's not. It's such a almost an underground movement, but with a full strong force behind it of artists and crafters. And we recognize that there's plenty of that in Fayetteville, but there's not necessarily a craft fair niche for them. And so, yes, there are tons of craft fair options, but there's not one that will be a collection of people like this. So Natalie and I might go to your traditional craft show and we would pick out, you know, four or five of our favorite vendors, where I think anybody would do that. And so what we have done is just pulled all of those different vendors from different locations and said we want them all in one place instead of mm-hmm. having 100 options and three or four good ones. So I think that's what makes this particularly different, because we've been able to handpick our personal aesthetic that also falls in line with what indie craft shows normally are.
And you said the indie craft show is sort of this underground movement that's happening. I mean, is that across the U.S. or is it limited to a certain region? Or have you guys been to one?
Absolutely. There's a ton of them, and there's a lot. They're typically smaller craft shows because it is a juried thing, and you're having to handpick what you specifically want for your show and what you're trying to achieve. So there is. It's been a huge. I don't know. Do you have anything to say towards that? There's a ton of them.
There are a ton of indie craft shows. And let me just say, we are new to this. Like, when we started this, we were like, okay, you know, maybe, you know, that 60-year-old woman who makes, like, crocheted blankets, like, maybe she'll apply and we can fill up a room. And then we got all of these applications and we were just like, holy moly, there's a need for this in Fayetteville. And so I feel like, you know, there is such a movement, and it's happening in Portland, and it's happening in Seattle, and in Los Angeles, and New York, and we were like, we deserve this in Fayetteville. I mean, Amber, the Friday after Thanksgiving, she's traveling all the way to Austin, Texas to participate in the Renegade Holiday Fair, and that's a huge craft show that started in Chicago, and so, like, artists are traveling that far just to be able to sell their product that has a certain aesthetic that would qualify as indie. So, I mean, yeah, I think it's a movement. People are wanting to purchase things that are made by hand and that are sewn in a small studio. I like to call it the human scale of products that we purchase. Like, that's just really cool. So that's what we're all about.
So you got a lot of submissions, which seems like it surprised you a little bit.
Yeah,
it did.
Did you? But in a good way. Did you? What sort of parameters did you set for yourself when you were trying to decide which ones you were going to choose to be in the show?
Oh, man. We sat across the street at the public library for probably 3 hours wanting to cry.
Well, I think it was 5 hours.
Yeah, it was a long time. We were kind of concerned because so many people had such amazing craftsmanship, and we had a small room and we wanted to fit everyone in. So
it was almost immediately you could tell from the submissions yes or no who's going to be in, because of that certain indie aesthetic. And I know that we were kind of running that into the ground, but it's something that if you do come to the Little Craft Show, you'll notice immediately. I think that it's something that's definitely set apart from the rest. So the certain people that had that aesthetic and look and cohesiveness to their pieces were established artists. There are a lot of different factors. You know, we were getting towards the end of the list and trying to, you know, cut people and not cut people. And it was sincerely a heartbreaking
it was horrible
few hours of trying to find who does fit this and having to say no to people that we think might still fit that. But we just don't have the room for them. And so that was really hard. So we're mm-hmm. actually already, we're trying to find space for a spring show, or maybe just starting to look for space for a show next December, but a bigger space, because we've recognized that this is quickly going to outgrow the space that we've been given.
So can you give me an example of some of the items that will be for sale there?
Yes. We have a lot of artists who create jewelry. Reese from Wild Hair Beadery, when he sent us the photos of his product, we almost peed our pants. Like, he is so talented. He, from his display of the way that he creates his line of jewelry, he'll use, like, vintage pieces that he's found from necklaces from the 50s and 40s, and like copper. Those just, like, those just like speak to my heart. I just love that. And then we have a woman by the name of Mary from Mary's Little Lambs, and she actually raises sheep, and then she what do you call it? She harvests the wool.
She shears
the wool, and then she spins the yarn and she knits these socks that are just beautiful. Amber, she has been like sewing up these beautiful plush owls that that people can purchase for their little wee ones. My husband's been bringing home chicken feathers for the last probably 2 months so that I can make these earrings out of chicken feathers from his farm. So there's just like a ton of totally unique things. And thankfully, we have sponsors who have kind of helped us out. If you go to the show and you purchase something from an artist, you'll get a raffle ticket that you will be entered to win one of, I think, 5 beautiful baskets made by our sponsors. We have a Moby wrap that we will be giving away from Terra Tots. We have 10 gift certificates from the Little Bread Company. We have this beautiful box with all of these handmade things from Riff Raff. You know, Handheld is giving a gift certificate to learn how to knit. All of these awesome things that our sponsors are giving away. And so we are truly thankful for them. Another cool thing about our show is that we also want to support some charities. So Ozark Folkways has allowed us to give money to them. So what will happen is that if you go to the show and you purchase something and you want it wrapped, you can actually get our volunteers to wrap your gift and then give a small donation, and all of that will go to Ozark Folkways.
This has sort of grown into this thing a little bigger than you were expecting, I see. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, what are you hoping that the community will get out of this and what will come from this event?
I think one of our primary concerns is supporting local and supporting handmade. And again, that's one of those things that you hear a lot, but people don't always necessarily know how to act on it. And so I think this is going to be a great event for people to come and see that they can get toys for their children. They can get gloves and mittens and mosaics and scarves and prints, artwork. I mean, the whole gamut of local and handmade, and it's all coming from right here. And it's not something that you'll find you can't find it anywhere else. You can go to the chains and you can be sucked into coupons and discounts for holiday sales. But I think that this is something that you can walk away with something much greater, knowing that you've supported someone that's trying to make a living doing this, or someone that has sincerely sat down at a table and worked on for, you know, hours or weeks to make. And so you get to walk away with that.
The Little Craft Show is scheduled for 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, December 3rd at Vintage Fellowship, which is located at 3416 North College in Fayetteville. Admission is free. For more information, visit thelittlecraftshow.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 18th of November, 2011. It's the birthday of the novelist and poet Margaret Atwood, born 1939 in Ottawa, Ontario. Her father, an entomologist, she spent a good deal of her childhood out in the woods with him as he did field work. Margaret Atwood said, "I grew up in the woods, outside of any social structures apart from those of my family, so I didn't absorb social structures through my skin the way many children do. If you grow up in a small town, you instinctively know who is who and what is what, and whom you can safely be contemptuous of." It was on this day, 1883, standard time zones were established in the United States and Canada. 4 time zones, 1 hour of solar time for each 15 degrees of longitude. Before that, towns and cities set their own time and drove people crazy, particularly the railroads. It's the birthday of the man who wrote, "I am the very model of a modern major general. I have information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England, and I quote the fights historical from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. I'm very well acquainted, too, with matters mathematical. I understand equations, both the simple and quadratical. About binomial theorem, I'm teeming with a lot of news with many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse. W.S. Gilbert of Gilbert and Sullivan, born London, 1836. Two men with very different personalities. Gilbert, who loved absurd stories, Sullivan preferred realism. Gilbert, who poked fun at the upper classes, and Sullivan, who longed to be accepted by them. Nonetheless, they wrote 14 comic operas together, including HMS Pinafore, The Pirates of Penzance, and The Mikado. Here's a poem for today by Margaret Atwood, In the Secular Night. In the secular night, you wander around alone in your house. It's 2:30. Everyone has deserted you, or this is your story. You remember it from being 16 when the others were out somewhere, having a good time, or so you suspected, and you had to babysit. You took a large scoop of vanilla ice cream and filled up the glass with grape juice and ginger ale and put on Glenn Miller with his big band sound and lit a cigarette and blew the smoke up the chimney and cried for a while because you were not dancing and then danced by yourself, your mouth circled with purple. Now, 40 years later, things have changed, and it's baby lima beans. It's necessary to reserve a secret vice. This is what comes from forgetting to eat at the stated mealtimes. You simmer them carefully, drain, add cream and pepper, and amble up and down the stairs, scooping them up with your fingers right out of the bowl, talking to yourself out loud. You'd be surprised if you got an answer, but that part will come later. There is so much silence between the words you say. You say, the sensed absence of God and the sensed presence amount to much the same thing, only in reverse. You say, I have too much white clothing. You start to hum. Several hundred years ago, this could have been mysticism or heresy. It isn't now. Outside, there are sirens. Someone's been run over. The century grinds on. A poem by Margaret Atwood, In the Secular Night, from Morning in the Burned House, published by Houghton Mifflin Company and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, partners with the National Endowment for the Arts in Poetry Out Loud, a national poetry recitation contest for high school students. More information at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
KUAF is supported by Ben Owens Shelter Insurance Agency, providing auto, home, and life insurance. 582-4990 for more information.
Serving the communities of Rogers, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, and Furry, this is KUAF 91.3 FM.
And where is Furry?
It's northeast of Van Buren.
Huh. You ever been there?
I haven't.
I have not either. Maybe I'll have to visit sometime. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas.
Izzy Agnihotri-Mendolker will be back on Sunday at 9 with Weekend Ozarks at Large, and she will also be your host for Monday's edition of Ozarks at Large. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.
Happy Friday.